I'm so grateful to parents like Helen who helped me win in Virginia without the help of Donald Trump.
Well, funny you should mention him, because he's been watching and he just asked to join us. Former and basically current president of the United States, Donald Trump.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much. I just wanted to congratulate Glenn Youngkin and mostly myself on a tremendous victory in Virginia. You know what, Glenn? We did it together.
Oh, you don't have to say that.
It's great to be here, Judge Judy, and it's great to be, frankly, winning again. We love to win, and you know what? You're going to see a lot more winning where that came from. Let me tell you, you're going to see it a lot.
Oh, you can take me off the split screen.
No. We did this together, Glenn. We did it so good, okay? I really want you to stay.
Really, that's okay.
Mr. President, you never actually campaigned with Glenn Youngkin, did you?
Well, no, I never did. Glenn, don't you dare. Don't go anywhere. Don't you dare, Glenn. You need to hear this. You know, I was never there with Glenn. You know, there. I was never there. But I told lots of people they should vote for Glenn, okay? And you know what? Most people don't like Glenn. But he's a wonderful guy, okay? Most people don't like him, but he's a wonderful guy, okay? Tall, rich, like my sons, okay? Glenn, you're like my son.
Please don't say that.
Wow, SNL debuts a new Donald
He's
Trump.
He's good.
He's good.
Yeah.
James
he is
Austin
really
Johnson.
Good at that.
Yeah. He also portrays President Biden on the show with his take of the former president and the cold open there. My God, he's amazing. He's got a lot of talent. That voice, it's triggering. I'm very triggered right now.
The pacing, it's great. Good morning and welcome to Morning Joe. It's Monday, November the 8th. Hope you had a fantastic weekend. And you know, Mika, SNL also took on the Green Bay Packers quarterback Aaron Rodgers and him lying about being vaccinated. We're going to show that in a sketch. And also, not just what SNL said, but I think much more damning for Aaron Rodgers, what some NFL Hall of Famers are saying about what he did, including Terry Bradshaw. Ouch. That sack hurt.
We'll have that coming up. That was a big sack. Also, something that sounds like an SNL sketch, Big Bird triggers Ted Cruz, the Texas senator, proving once again he's more interested in owning the libs than being a productive legislator. The Democrats, on the other hand, are legislating, and Friday was a BFD for the party. We'll get into passage
According
of the infrastructure
Biden.
Bill and the big jobs number, and TV's own Willie Geist will get out of his ice bath. Look at him.
Oh,
look at him.
Yeah.
Come in. This is so amazing.
Come on, baby.
Yes. The New York City Marathon.
You know, Alex actually points out, Mika,
so
that that's at
done.
Real speed. Like, you're thinking that slow-mo? No. That's actually, Alex tells us the actual speed he crossed the finish
well,
line.
Well, I can't now, wait to talk to Willie, because he did a great job. We were all rooting for him, and he was doing it for Parkinson's research. And I think, I know how much it hurts to run a race, but I think the fact that you're running for something probably gets you through. We'll talk to Willie about that. Plus the stalker that
Let's talk Willie for a second here. First of all, a really good time for the first time doing this.
Amazing.
It really is unbelievable how well he did. And on top of that, he was actually carrying an extra weight.
He was.
And Mika, it kind of surprises me that he made it through, because at one point I thought he was going to be knocked over.
You know, it kind of came out of nowhere. I don't know if we have the
video. Out of nowhere.
Acor, do we have the video of there it is. Look, this woman, this craven woman just jumps into his arms. Turns out it's our very own Stephanie Ruhle.
So funny.
And I don't know how Willie feels right now, because I know that what it feels like to be running a race like that and then to care. But she is she's light, but still, he picks her up and carries her.
Must be. But can you imagine? I mean, I would have a taser if I were even doing like a 100-mile sprint, a 100-yard sprint. I just stay away from me. But he picked her up, spun her around, kept on running. And,
that is,
you know, Bill
awesome.
Kerins also had his personal best, which Bill just keeps doing this thing.
He's amazing.
I I tell you what, you respect people that can do things that you just could never do. And I would definitely put this in that category. Just absolutely unbelievable. Congratulations to Bill Cairns. Congratulations to Willie Geist. Willie's here at 8 o'clock, right? Talking about Stephanie Ruhle and all the other challenges he had in the race.
Exactly. And what it must feel like to have that in the rearview mirror, because he's been training for months. With us, we have the host of Way Too Early. It was good. It was good, Jonathan Lemire.
White
House Bureau Chief for Political Too. Yeah, I was watching this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was doing this. Well, you tend to hide in the corner.
Well, I go where they tell me where the cameras are.
Really? Your first mistake.
You know, I should have taken more
don't
authority.
Listen to
next
them.
Time, we'll do it right here. We'll do it tomorrow, right here.
You should be right here at the end of the show. If I'm here, you're here. If Joe's here, come on, join
us. Let's do it. That works for
what
me.
What the heck?
Let's do it.
Come on. All right. Whatever. He's got to get a backbone here thing. All right. Host of MSNBC's Politics Nation, president of the National Action Network, Reverend Al Sharpton is here. He's perfect.
How was your weekend, Rev?
Very good. I mean, I was glad that we ended up getting something good in terms of the infrastructure. I'm waiting on the other part. So I had something positive to preach about Sunday. So
nice.
I was glad to see how the Friday night gave me a Sunday sermon.
That gave you, something inspirational.
Yeah, absolutely.
Finally, from Washington, former Treasury official and Morning Joe economic analyst Steve Rattner is with us. It's great to see you, Steve.
It's great to be on set.
Do you have church today?
I have, of course.
God. Well, everyone's now going to wake up. And author and economic...
He also, I don't know, Mika, one other really quick thing, but we didn't have a clip of this, but Steve Rattner also there jumped out of his townhouse and jumped over the fence and also jumped into Willie Geist's arms during the race.
Oh, that's so nice.
I would have.
I will say, I was actually on the marathon route as well in Brooklyn around mile 7 or 8. Didn't see Bill. He was going too fast to see.
Yeah.
There's a lot of crowd people.
Bill's
saw
amazing.
Willie. Had the good sense to leave Willie alone.
Thank you.
Just saw him, waved at him, cheered him on. He looked like he had his music in. He was locked in. I think the Eye of the Tiger, I assume, was on the headphones. He did great, and congratulations.
Really, really big deal. Yeah. And author and economic policy analyst Heather McGee joins us this morning. Great to have you in so early, Heather. Thanks for being with us. Let's start, though, with the latest with Green Bay Packers star quarterback Aaron Rodgers. This was really kind of like stood out. On Friday, officially revealed that he is indeed unvaccinated and sought alternative treatments because he says he is allergic to an ingredient in the mRNA vaccines made by Pfizer and Moderna. Last week, he tested positive for COVID-19. Rodgers said he has received monoclonal antibodies and has taken ivermectin, a drug generally used to deworm animals, and thanked podcast host Joe Rogan, who has come under fire for his advocacy of discredited coronavirus treatments. The Fox Sports NFL Sunday crew did not hold back yesterday when discussing Rodgers' decision to skip the vaccine but tell the public he was immunized. Hall of Fame coach Jimmy Johnson and Hall of Fame defensive end Howie Long calling that decision selfish, while Hall of Famer Michael Strahan criticized Rodgers' use of Martin Luther King Jr., quote, in his defense. But it was Hall of Famer Terry Bradshaw who had the harshest words for Rodgers.
I'd give Aaron Rodgers some advice. It would have been nice if he'd have just come to the Naval Academy and learned how to be honest.
Yeah.
Learn not to lie, because that's what you did, Aaron. You lied to everyone. I understand immunized. What you were doing was taking stuff that would keep you from getting COVID-19. You got COVID-19. Ivermectin is a cattle dewormer. Sorry, folks. That's what it is. We are a divided nation politically. We're a divided nation on the COVID-19, whether or not to take the vaccine. And unfortunately, we've got players that pretty much think only about themselves. And I'm extremely disappointed in the actions of Aaron Rodgers.
Well, you know, and that's what Howie Long brought up a great point. And by the way, when Terry Bradshaw is saying that to you, you know, I think the Charlie Daniels Band actually wrote in America about Terry Bradshaw. You just go lay your hand on a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. And then, sir, I think you'll understand how tough America is. You know, he's talking about the woke mob coming after him, but Jonathan Lemire, wasn't no woke mob there. Those were NFL legends and some of the toughest NFL legends who trust me, are just revered in red state America, calling Aaron Rodgers out for his selfishness.
Yeah, those words will hit hard and they'll resonate among NFL fans, to be sure. It's interesting how the league has very quickly turned on Rodgers. A lot of the reporting on this came from NFL.com, the state media, if you will, of the National Football League. And Rodgers did two things here that I think a lot of people are going to have a really hard time with. First of all, he lied. He chose his words, immunized, dodged the question about whether he was vaccinated or not when he was asked back in training camp. And then he also put his teammates in danger. He didn't follow the protocols that the NFL laid out for unvaccinated players, according to reporting. And he showed up at news conferences with media members, not wearing a mask when he obviously should have. And he gave this interview on Friday that was just so damaging, promoting conspiracy theories, attacking the cancel culture and the woke mob, saying how Joe Rogan was his expert analysis. Meanwhile, this is Aaron Rodgers. He's a top three star in the NFL. He could have access to any medical personnel he would like. He has all the money. As well. And his fall from grace here in the last few days has simply been swift and stunning. The team lost without him this weekend. They looked hopeless. And it is really difficult to imagine him sort of getting back in good graces, but also facing his teammates in the locker room after all of this, when he does return from this COVID-19 leave that he's been placed on. And look, I'm not one to ever defend Kyrie Irving, who's the other big star in the NBA, who also is not vaccinated, at least for now. Looks like he's missing the entire season for the Brooklyn Nets. But at least, Irving made his choice and then kind of went away. He's not promoting conspiracy theories in public forums. Rodgers did, and that makes this all the worse.
Well, and Howie Long said something that really, I think, resonates, and it's my attitude. It's your body. You can do what you want to do with your body. But when you're the leader of a team, when you're on a team, when you're in a locker room, when you're in such tight spaces, when you're putting your teammates at risk, and by extension, their children at risk, their parents at risk, and their families at risk, it's just unbelievably reckless. And Howie Long, he said, you can do what you want to do as a person, but when you're quarterback and you're on an NFL team, you're in tight quarters, and you need to get the vaccine. Heather, it's just like I've got a friend who is a big Trump fan, flew the Trump flag, I think, way too long, even after Trump lost. I knew he was a Vietnam vet. And just in casual conversation one day, I said, well, what do you think about them making people in the military get the vaccine? He goes, they're in the military. They follow orders. They do what they're told to do. And by the way, the military man and him, got him going out there and getting the vaccine, too. That's the thing. People keep saying, my body, my right. Of course, they said that only about the vaccine, not when it comes to women's issues. Huh. But it stops just being your body, your right, when you're a police officer, when you're in the military, or in this case, when you play in a league that has very tight protocols to protect your teammates.
That's exactly right, Joe. And I think Americans are looking at that and saying, my 19-year-old who is working as a cashier in Wendy's has to face the public, oftentimes without masks, has, got vaccinated for his or her own health. I think we're looking at school teachers, nurses, firefighters, people who have been bearing the brunt, right? Who have really been essential workers during this time period. And the amount of burdens that we put on working class people in this society without a lot of childcare, without reliable healthcare, retirement. And then we've got multimillionaires who have absolutely every privilege in the world to play a game, who are saying, I'm going to go it on my own. And that's the core question here, right? And I think that has been a core tension in American life. And the pandemic and the right wing's decision to double down on the anti-government, on the anti-social, in order to, keep playing the long game, right? Which is their ideology. If you don't want a strong government who has the power to mandate a vaccine, because you also don't want them to have the power to mandate taxes on the wealthy, corporations and regulations. That's the long game that they're playing on the right. But the problem is it costs lives. And every time an individual who's caught up in the right-wing media infrastructure, touts these sort of you know, if ivermectin and woke mob, all of that now are kind of dog whistles about saying, whose side am I on in this culture war fight? That's all fun and games for political news, but it's real life. And people will die as long as there are these holdouts. Fortunately, that's the minority of the country, right? We are at 70% plus who have said, yeah, I'm going to take the vaccine. I'm going to trust science. I'm going to help my country recover.
Boy, that is the great news. And we always, you know, we're talking about New York City workers and the strikes that were going on and the deals were being done. 9 out of 10 New York City workers now have been vaccinated. So that really is great news. By the way, we played you one SNL clip. Let's do SNL's take on Aaron Rodgers here. It's pretty funny.
It's worth it.
Our first guest is an American brave enough to stand up and say, screw you, science, I know Joe Rogan. Let's welcome NFL MVP Aaron Rodgers. Now, Aaron, you're not vaccinated. So what? Who the hell cares? It's your body, your choice. And please never use that quote for any other issues.
Exactly, Janine. It's my body and my COVID. You know, I could give it to whoever I want. But suddenly the woke mob is coming after me.
Did you ever lie about being vaccinated?
I never lied. I took all my teammates into a huddle, got all their faces 3 inches away from my wet mouth, and told them, trust me, I'm more or less immunized. Go team. And look, people could talk all they want, but at the end of the day, my record is still 7-1, meaning of the 8 people I've infected, 7 are fine.
And now the Packers are 7-2. Reverend Al, the part of this that has always, I haven't figured out, right? I just haven't figured out is if you're playing on a team day in and day out, and you've been struggling with them, if it's in baseball, it's the first day of spring training. Football, you know, it's the first, you know, early summer camps when you start going to those camps. And you've been fighting hard and working hard with one goal. If you're the Packers, it's to win the Super Bowl. And my gosh, anybody that's ever, you know, played football understands how intense those practices are and how much the focus is on getting to the end, winning every game you can win. I've just always been struck with the selfishness. And I'll be honest with you. Same thing with Red Sox players who didn't get the vaccines. And the Red Sox fought COVID throughout the entire second half of the season. It really hurt them a lot. And you just sit there going, wait, you're getting paid millions and millions of dollars to win games. And not only are you stopping yourself from doing as well as you can, but other people around you. Here's Aaron Rodgers. He's quarterback. He's leader of the team, and he's let his team down terribly and cost him a game yesterday.
It cost him a game. It also cost him credibility with his team in terms of being a leader of the team, showing team spirit, and showing how they all supposed to function together. It is the height of selfishness to say that I'm going to make a decision, I'm going to lie about the decision, and I'm going to put people at risk. I mean, at least Kyrie didn't lie. And I think that is the real thing that has really indicted the people, putting an indictment on what he has done. You know, there's a biblical expression, you and I always talk Bible, Joe, that much is given, much is required. Mm-hmm. The more you're given, the more elevation, the more material things, there is a price for that. And part of the price is if you're going to enjoy public acclaim, you ought to be honest with the public and try to protect the public.
It would be nice. All right. Now moving on to President Biden, who celebrated the passage of the bipartisan infrastructure bill over the weekend. The key agenda item was passed in the Senate earlier this year and moved through the House with some Republican support late on Friday. The president is calling the investment in America historic.
Finally, Infrastructure Week. I'm so happy to say that, Infrastructure Week. Folks, yesterday, I don't think it's an exaggeration to suggest that we took a monumental step forward as a nation. But we're looking more forward to having shovels in the ground to begin rebuilding America. And for all of you at home who feel left behind and forgotten, in an economy that's changing so rapidly, this bill is for you.
Steve Rattner, a lot of debate around the other bill that's still being sort of carved up and negotiated. No debate over this infrastructure bill. Even Republicans voted for it despite intense pressure. But I must say, I'm not exactly sure how, with our infrastructure declining, any Republican could justify voting against better roads, safer bridges, better broadband, cleaner water. I mean, you go down the list. This bill is helping us catch up to years and years of neglect with our with America's infrastructure.
No question, Joe. I think it was a heroic accomplishment. I think there were moments when no one thought this would be possible. It does put close to $600 billion of new money into all the things that you just mentioned and tries to bring us into the 21st century. We here in New York know how urgently we need a new tunnel under the Hudson River connecting Penn Station to the rest of the country before that tunnel, which is over 100 years old, collapses, and there are bridges, roads, and everything all over this country that need the money. And so it was done. It was done on a bipartisan basis. There were many moments when I think we all thought it was going to get pulled down and die, along with the other piece of legislation that I'm sure we're going to be talking about. But it got through. But look, there are two other points to be made about it. One, that it is not fully funded, and we should just all recognize that. It's okay maybe to invest in things without fully funding it, but only about half of the $570 billion is actually paid for. And the second thing, which is inevitable with a piece of legislation, it's a lot about execution. And can this money be spent wisely, invested wisely, and produce what it's supposed to produce? There are things in there that were done in order to get a majority of the Senate initially on board. There's $1.25 billion in there for ferries in Alaska. There's $500 or $600 million in there for a railroad from Minneapolis to Duluth. I don't know how many people want to go by train from Minneapolis to Duluth. There's money in there for high-speed rail that California's been trying to build for more than a decade through the Central Valley that nobody's ever going to take from anywhere to anywhere. So we do have to be really careful. You remember in the Obama administration, they passed over $800 billion, and there were questions after about how well that money was spent. And so it's great to pass it, but now we got to spend it the right way and get the benefits, Joe, that you just talked about.
Well, Central Valley of California, here I come. I'll be the first on that high-speed trail train. And Lemire and I, there's nothing we love more than playing wiffle ball in Duluth late summer afternoon. So those are two great ones for me, Jonathan Lemire. I'm wondering how positive the president's looking right now at the passage of this bill, and does it help him pass a Build Back Better bill in the coming weeks? Is he confident?
Minnesota summers are lovely, Joe. I'll see you out there in August.
Gorgeous.
This this obviously was messy to get there, but the end result, this is a gigantic win for the president. We can't underscore that enough. This is something he promised to do. He campaigned on the idea of making government work again. He was given, surprisingly, Democratic majorities, slim ones, but still majorities in the House and Senate, and he was able to even get some Republican support. So this is a significant win here. And yes, there'll be questions about how it's spent, but it is a gigantic accomplishment in itself. Now, it is only part one, and there's a long way to go for part two. This is going to kick back and forth between the House and the Senate quite a bit. We're going to hear loud voices of Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema again. There is still, despite the show of unity late Friday night, some distrust between the progressives and the more conservative Democrats. They're going to have to mend. It was a heroic effort by Speaker Pelosi to count the votes and get them done, but it's going to only get harder from here. That said, the White House is encouraged. The president late Friday was on the phone working with lawmakers, and he did something he hadn't done yet. He made two different trips during this negotiation process, a somewhat tortured process, up Pennsylvania Avenue, Capitol Hill, to meet with Democrats. Neither time did he call for a vote. Friday night, he did. He put out a statement and said, "I need your support right now," and enough members of his party backed him. And the White House believes that will happen again. That yes, this is going to be a while. This might not be till December, and Congress certainly has its plate full near the end of the year. But they do think that this will get done with the president acting as the closer and giving Democrats, in the wake of last week's debacle in Virginia, something to run on going into the midterms.
Oh, that would be nice.
Well,
ahead, Joe.
I mean, I'm sorry, Mika. I was just saying the great news, Mika, is that they actually have space now. They have the political space to negotiate. They passed this bipartisan infrastructure bill. Now Joe Manchin and Nancy Pelosi, who are talking every day, and progressives who have been trying to find a middle ground, can do their work. and it's not cameras coming after him every day. Are you going to pass it today? Are you going to pass it tomorrow? So they can actually sit back, wait a couple of weeks, draft the language, get it just right, and pass a bill. And I'm pretty confident they'll be able to do that.
So still ahead on Morning Joe, the bipartisan infrastructure bill includes more than $100 billion for environmental and clean energy initiatives. We'll speak to the point person on that front, Energy Secretary Jennifer Granholm, plus how the Congressional Black Caucus helped save Democrats from themselves. Congresswoman Joyce Beatty explains how that group helped bridge the divide on infrastructure. And the story that we mentioned at the top, Ted Cruz picks a fight with Big Bird. As Congressman Eric Swalwell framed it, imagine coming down harder on a fictional bird than the man who called your wife ugly. The latest on the senator's outrage with a puppet when Morning Joe comes right back. Welcome back to Morning Joe. It's 29 past the hour. Here's a look at some of the other stories making headlines this morning. Authorities are looking into the causes behind the deadly crowd surge at rapper Travis Scott's sold-out AstroWorld Music Festival in Houston over the weekend. Eight people died and dozens more were injured when the crowd rushed the stage during the concert on Friday night. Two teenagers, ages 14 and 16, were among those killed. Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner reported this on Saturday. More than 300 people were also treated for injuries throughout the event at an on-site field hospital. The Houston Police Department tweeted yesterday that the investigation into the tragedy is, quote, in its early stages. In a statement on Saturday, Scott said he could not have imagined the severity of the situation and was absolutely devastated by what took place. Joe, this is incredible. I mean, people, literally, these teenagers were killed.
Yeah, it is, but it can't be a surprise. This has been an ongoing problem through the years. So much of a problem that at least for, you know, the past 15 years or so, when my kids had wanted to go to concerts, I'd say, okay, fine, but you're not, no general admission. Because we've seen this tragedy happen, Rev, time and time again, where you have general admission, and people get pushed towards the stage. Some people get trampled. People get hospitalized. This is an ongoing problem. Years ago, I remember some act stopped doing general admission, would put chairs there just to stop that sort of onrush. But they need to figure out how to protect concert goers, and they just can't have general admission up front anymore. Let me say it again. They can't have general admission because this will happen over and over and over again.
No, I certainly agree. You must end general admission. I think that sometimes in the quest for having big numbers, sometimes we relax things that really violate public safety. And what happened the other night did that. I understand from some reports this morning there was even some concern by the rapper and some of those around him. But clearly it was not enforced, and we end up with a disaster. I would hope, aside from our praying for the families, I would hope this does end general admissions, or at least begin the moves towards stopping this, because you're putting yourself at risk, or you're allowing your children or whoever goes to these things to be at risk. There's nothing you can do when a stampede is heading your way, and it's too late to try to figure it out when you are already in the middle of that.
And now moving to this, a judge has delayed former New York Governor Andrew Cuomo's arraignment on a forcible touching charge. The Albany County District Attorney asked for the delay, telling the judge the misdemeanor complaint filed against Cuomo is, quote, potentially defective. because it doesn't include key testimony from the alleged victim. Cuomo is accused of groping an executive assistant at the governor's mansion last December. His arraignment had been scheduled for the 17th of this month. It's now scheduled to make his first court appearance on January 7th. Cuomo's attorney has said her client never assaulted anyone and suggested last week that his prosecution was politically motivated. The whole thing did seem to come together in pieces. It struck me right when I first read it that something was up with this. So it's interesting this has happened. The Iraqi government says the country's prime minister survived an assassination attempt in Baghdad over the weekend. The prime minister appeared on television yesterday after the attack. Iraqi state media reports a drone carrying explosives slammed into the PM's residence, wounding seven of his security guards. Security forces say they also shot down two other drones that entered nearby airspace. The Iraqi military deployed troops throughout Baghdad following the attack. So far, no group has taken responsibility for the attack, but it comes amid heated protests following the country's parliamentary elections. The Biden administration says the U.S. will assist Iraq's security forces in their investigation. And coming up, a federal appeals court delivers a blow to one of the White House's signature attempts to boost vaccinations. But the administration is not concerned. We're going to dig into the legal battle over the administration's vaccine requirement for private companies. That's next on Morning Joe.
Hey, welcome back to Morning Joe. I hope you had a great weekend. Hope your Monday morning starting out well. It is 6:39 a.m. on the East Coast as we look at the United States Capitol. You know, Heather, I've been saying for a year now that it is remarkable and oh so very American that Madisonian democracy was saved by black women in Milwaukee County, in Wayne County, in Philadelphia, in Atlanta, Georgia. And isn't that just the story of this country? Black women went out and actually saved a constitution that originally had provisions in it that protected slavery and slave owners. But they did it. And we are all, those of us who believe that our constitution was endangered, we're all beneficiaries of it. We now see, and we're going to be talking to Congresswoman Beatty at 8 a.m., we now see that it was a Congressional Black Caucus that saved this president's agenda over the weekend.
You know, this is not a surprise at all, Joe, and it's not really about black girl magic or whatever the, you know, kind of T-shirt slogans are about. It's really about when you have systems of racial and economic and social hierarchy, people who are often put because of their identity at the bottom of that hierarchy, you know, we have the best view of the whole system. We can see who's harmed by it. We are the people who are often taking care of those who are the most vulnerable. We are overwhelmed. Black women, for example, are have the highest labor force participation rates. We work very hard. We are often working in the industries and in the jobs where it's so clear what's not working and what's broken. And so our drive to want to fix it is so strong. You know, I think about right now this question of, okay, what's next? If you think about this Build Back Better agenda, the stuff that did not pass over the weekend, that the country still supports in 65 to some cases 90% overwhelming majority, these are the kinds of jobs that make all other jobs possible. They're the care jobs, they're home care, elder care, child care. put back paid family leave, Joe Manchin. We worried about, you know, women in the suburbs. You know what women in the suburbs want? They want to be able to balance work and family. This is an extremely popular policy that needs, that we are right now the outlier in the United States in not providing for our families. And this is the point, right? I talk about this in my book. All of these measures to help people who are struggling the most ultimately are great for our overall economy, and they are great for the nation. Racism has a cost for everyone, and these kinds of equity measures, these kinds of measures that look at how families are suffering and struggling needlessly and say, you know what, there are common solutions to our common problems. These are the kinds of things that we need to do to invest and to be competitive globally. And it's just not an option. It is not an option to stop with the bipartisan infrastructure bill. We've got to build back better. It's politically important. It's important in terms of gender and racial equity. And it's absolutely what Black women were organizing and going to the polls for. To save our Constitution and to make this country worthy of its promise.
And Rev Sharpton, you talk about Bible verses. Boy, there's just a Bible verse that fits this one so tightly that you just got to say it when it comes to Black women helping us a year ago save Madisonian democracy. And that is, of course, the rejected stone has become the cornerstone. And that is exactly what we've seen last year. It's what we even saw this past week.
No doubt about it. And the cornerstone of American democracy has been Black women. You know, I was privileged as a teenager to be involved in Shirley Chisholm's campaign for president in 72. And what Heather's kind enough not to say is what Black women have had to fight is not only racism, but misogyny in the Black community. I mean, so you've had this double barrel pointed at their head. And I saw it firsthand with Mrs. Chisholm and later now with Kamala Harris, where they had to deal with the racism of the general society and the misogyny of some Black men that felt that the only way they could exert themselves was by belittling Black women. And to be able to battle that gave them an extra strength, which made them strong enough to hold up this country when this country was not at its best. And I think that Black women showed that in this fight. I think that she's also right that we need the Build Back Better plan. But we also, I think the broadband that we got in this first step is fine. But if I know Joyce Beatty and others, they're going to bring it across the finish line in terms of the other part of this this bill. So Black women certainly are the strongest bedrock of this country in terms of the electoral and democratic process.
And we'll talk more about this coming up, but we'll move to COVID now. Former FDA Commissioner Scott Gottlieb, who is also on Pfizer's board of directors, was very optimistic yesterday after Pfizer announced on Friday incredibly positive results of its new pill that helps decrease COVID hospitalizations and deaths.
And I think we're close to the end of this. This Delta wave is the last major wave of infection. We've always said that two of the events that would demarcate the end of this pandemic was being able to vaccinate our children. We're now able to do that down to age 5. And also having a widely available or orally accessible drug that could treat coronavirus at home to prevent people from being hospitalized or dying.
Also helping is the approval of the vaccine for children ages 5 to 11. The CDC says nearly 300,000 children under the age of 12 have received their first dose of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine in the 6 days since the agency approved the shot for that age group. Getting them today is your babies.
My two boys, ages 10 and now 7,
great,
are getting their shots this evening. They're excited about it. We're excited about it.
Can you imagine?
It'll be a huge relief, that for a year and a half or more, we've been waiting for this day, and it's a miracle of science.
The more parents that make that choice, it could be the real game changer for all of us. We still all know somebody getting COVID because of Delta being so transmissible. The kids are the ones that bring it home, and we've got to curtail that. Meanwhile, the Biden administration's federal vaccine mandate for companies with at least 100 employees was temporarily blocked by a federal appeals court on Saturday. A 3-judge panel on the New Orleans-based Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals said the new rules raise, quote, grave statutory and constitutional issues. The court gave the Justice Department until 5 p.m. today to respond to the lawsuit filed by GOP-led states and businesses. This comes as more than 15 states have filed lawsuits against the administration over its federal vaccine mandate for companies. But White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain says he is certain the mandate will still stand.
I'm quite confident that when this finally gets fully adjudicated, not just a temporary order,
right,
the validity of this requirement will be upheld. It's common all sense, right, Chuck. If OSHA can tell people to wear a hard hat on the job,
right,
to be careful on chemicals, it can put in place these simple measures to keep our workers safe.
All right, let's bring in right now State Attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg, and former prosecutor Charles Coleman. Charles, you know, people look at this ruling, they may see the headlines and go, oh my gosh, this is a huge setback for the Biden administration. But we need to put some context here. The Fifth Circuit, has it not been to Republicans what the Ninth Circuit traditionally has been to Democrats? Much more conservative and much more willing to stand in the way of Democratic administrations whenever they get the chance.
Good morning, Joe. You're absolutely right. What we're seeing here is the Fifth Circuit doing what the Fifth Circuit does. And you already described that perfectly. That is a very conservative circuit on the U.S. Court of Appeals. We know this. And we even saw states and businesses who are not in the Fifth Circuit file amicus briefs in support of this motion because they knew that with these GOP and conservative judges that they have on this actual circuit, there was at least a fighting chance of them getting this opposition in terms of the vaccine mandate passed. But at the end of the day, what we likely believe is going to happen is that this is going to go to the Supreme Court and it is ultimately going to be upheld. So this is just essentially a case of kicking the can down the road.
Hmm. Hey, Dave, good morning. It's Jonathan Lemire. Let me ask you about the same thing. I'm reading here, you're somewhat critical of the decision-making process here by the Fifth Circuit. Tell us why. And pick up on Charles's point there as to is going to the Supreme Court and why do you also think the mandate will be upheld and why?
Yeah, good morning, Jonathan. I agree with Charles. The Fifth Circuit has the reputation of not just being the most conservative federal appellate court, but also the most political and also the least tethered to precedent. Remember, this is the same court that refused to intervene in the notorious Texas abortion law that allowed that to go into effect, mm-hmm. the one that creates vigilante justice to get around Roe versus Wade. And here they're doing the opposite. They're actually intervening using a different rule. Instead of just going through this traditional way of issuing a preliminary injunction, they just said, hey, we find there are grave statutory and constitutional issues here. And so they're acting pretty political. You can see why the Supreme Court, where Chief Justice Roberts has expressed concerns about politics, that this could exacerbate the public perception of the court as just politicians wearing black robes. And I do think the U.S. Supreme Court will reinstate the mandate after the Fifth Circuit does away with it, because first, it's not really a mandate. I mean, this is something that allows an opt-out for people who are unvaccinated to go ahead and just get tested weekly for COVID. And secondly, there's the 1905 Jacobson ruling, where the Supreme Court said that vaccine mandates at the state and local level are constitutional. Justice Harlan, in a 7-2 ruling, said that one person's liberty does not override everyone mm-hmm. else's. Now, we're not totally sure if that ruling will apply to a federal vaccine mandate, but this Supreme Court doesn't seem to have too much sympathy for anti-vaxxers, as evidenced by Justice Barrett's ruling for Indiana University in August against students who complained about the vaccine mandate there.
Charles, this is about companies being able to have a safe workplace. I'm trying to understand what's unconstitutional about it. I mean, is there any potential that those pushing against this mandate for businesses with, 100 employees or more? That's a lot of businesses across the country that want to be back to work at full capacity and getting this economy back on track.
Well, what I found interesting about this case is that what they used as a means of trying to argue this wasn't necessarily a matter of should they be able to do it. It was a question of the authority under OSHA, because OSHA essentially made this regulation or approved this regulation under emergency emergency authority. I don't know that that's going to be enough down the line, particularly given what we've seen in terms of COVID and the economy and the work and the amount of strain that is placed on different workspaces in order to try to get this vaccine mandate done away with. I don't think that's going to be enough because the cost has been so great on the American people and so great on the country that more than likely what the court is going to do is basically validate that OSHA did have the authority to, in fact, make this ruling and support what the Biden administration is trying to do.
Dave Ehrenberg.
Boy, it's going to be a real breach.
Go ahead, Joe.
I'm sorry, Mika. You go.
I'm just saying that the Delta variant is still actually, it's, you know, still very much a part of our lives. We have got many months to go at the rate that we're going right now in order to have COVID behind us. These mandates are proven to work. Look at New York City.
Yeah, Mika, I think you've seen great success by corporate America stepping up to the plate and requiring employees to get vaccinated. And so that's why I don't think that this decision by the Fifth Circuit will have a big impact on things, because the corporations in our country have moved forward regardless. They don't need the federal government to tell them because they're doing it anyway. I mean, in our office, for example, we're in a state here where Governor DeSantis has banned vaccine mandates, but we found a way around it by requiring it. And if you don't get it, you have to get tested weekly for COVID. And that's just what the Biden administration is asking. So regardless of what happens, I think you will see corporate America moving ahead. And this is just about, you know, politicians on the far right trying to own the libs and trying to inherit the MAGA base. This is MAGA performance art. You know, you see it in Governor DeSantis offering $5,000 bonuses to unvaccinated police officers to come to Florida. So it's about ignoring the science, doing the political thing, regardless of the human cost.
All right. Former prosecutor Charles Coleman and state attorney for Palm Beach County, Dave Ehrenberg. Thank you both very much for coming on this morning. All right. A tweet from a beloved fictional bird is causing a flap within the GOP. It started Saturday when the Twitter account for Sesame Street's Big Bird posted that he received the COVID-19 vaccine. While Big Bird has been on Sesame Street since episode one back in 1969, he's portrayed as being 6 years old, making him recently eligible to get vaccinated. It wasn't long before some Republican lawmakers, including Texas Senator Ted Cruz, began attacking Big Bird for spreading, quote, government propaganda. We'll note that Sesame Street and Big Bird have been promoting public health messages for decades. In a 1972 episode, Big Bird joined a line of other children getting their measles vaccines. You see, Big Bird helps make it less scary. Cruz essentially admitted on Twitter the whole thing was just an exercise in owning the libs, showing glee in trending on the site because of his comment.